Talk given Saturday, 30th April 1977. Let us consider today a passage in this book, The Heart of Religion. Child of the immortal light, have you treasured each tear like a pearl in your heart? The voice of one that loves calls incessantly, "Come home, beloved, come home by the road of virtue. There is no other way. Let the natural springs of your heart move your feet, unbleeding, on the road of many names, love and beauty and wisdom and peace and joy. As you walk, you will see the goodness of God fill all the world. Such is the way of virtue." We will now examine this passage in detail. Fill all the world. Such is the way of virtue. Child of the immortal light. That is what each and every one of us is. Potentially. It is that light which has to shine through us unhindered. And it shines when we truly live the religious life, mindfully awake, circumspect was a word that the Buddha used in this connection. This immortal light is not just a poetic phrase. It's a phrase to represent that transcendent power or energy, the supreme creative power of the universe, which brought everything into being, including ourselves. We are the children of that immortal light. Everything is born of that immortal light. But we human beings have the power to prevent that light from shining through us. And it gets prevented through our ignorance and our heedlessness. Very few of us are brought up and educated to care for that light, to know of that light. We know it unknowing, unconsciously, spontaneously, when we are very little children, and then the impact of the world as it is, that is to say, the world of human beings as it is, drives that natural, spontaneous, unconscious knowledge deep into our subconscious minds and locks it up there. So we never come to fulfillment. But we have to awake to this fact that we are the children of this immortal light. And it is this immortal light that exerts an influence continuously upon us in order that we may awake. But this influence which it exerts is not a compulsion. This we must bear in mind. Bear in mind very carefully, because one of the great purposes of our existence as human beings is to bring forth out of each one of us as individuals the faculty of turning inwards, seeing that light, becoming sensitive to it, and then consciously cooperating with it. This is our spiritual freedom, our true human freedom. So to live, so to understand the whole psychophysical organism and its ways, to understand ourselves, as we say, that we realize the peak point of right self-restraint, no suppression or repression. If there is true understanding, suppression and repression have no place, but the right sort of restraint comes in because we exercise right choice everywhere, in all circumstances. That is why this immortal light, call it God, call it transcendence, call it by any name you please, never compels. It exerts its influence because it cannot help exerting an influence. It is a power. It is a force. And every force operates throughout the whole cosmos. Just because it exists. In the same way, you and I, just because we exist, continuously exert an influence upon our environment. But the influence that human beings exercise upon their environment and upon their fellow human beings is so unlike this utterly beneficent, benign, all-enduring influence which transcendence exerts upon us. So utterly unlike. Because we wish to dominate. We wish to satisfy the drives and urges of the psychophysical organism blindly. And also all those drives and ambitions which are thrust upon us by our socio-cultural heritage, by the people of the world around us. These are very deep and important things to understand, where the living of the religious life in the real sense is concerned. Because if we understand these things, we shall understand what, begin to understand at least, something of what the purification of the mind and the heart mean. And this purification, through our conscious right Choice is the meaning of right self-restraint. And at the peak point of that self-restraint, there is that complete freedom of the whole being, of the mature being which has come to fruition. In that state of fruition, there is perfect freedom. There is perfect peace. Inwardly, whatever the circumstance around us may be, one has to live it in order to realize it. Not as an experience, but as a continual state of being. And in this process, there is much to suffer, much to go through. The difficulties are endless. External help, in reality, there is none. It may appear so, but the real help is that which comes from within ourselves, because within ourselves is this immortal light which cannot err, cannot make any mistake with respect to us, because we are one of the multitudinous, unique expressions of that immortal light. Therefore, it is the really reliable source of help from within us. So we have to go through much. That is why I have written, "Have you treasured each tear like a pearl in your heart?" And it is the voice of that one, this immortal light, this divinity that nestles during the lifetime of our own being in this organism which goes by our name. It is the voice of that one that loves. That one loves transcendentally, not as we who are still perhaps subhuman love, for we love in the ambivalent sense, a dependent love, a love based upon reciprocity. And whatever is based upon reciprocity, whilst in our empirical experience in the world of affairs, has its place, but that which is based on reciprocity has no relationship to eternity, no relationship to that which is reality, the reality which is unborn and undying, eternal. So, it is the voice of one that loves in that sense which calls incessantly, "Come home, beloved. Come home." What is this home? The awakened consciousness. The consciousness which no longer separates, which is no longer restricted to discriminativeness, to taking sides with one as against another. Right choice, we have already considered these few minutes, is quite different from preferential choice. because preferential choice means choice at the expense of something else or someone else, rejecting someone else in favor of this one or that one. So, come home to this state of awakened, fully awakened consciousness, in which state awareness of transcendence and oneself being transcendent virtue are one and the same thing. You see, the theologies of the theistic religions have quarreled fiercely with regard to this business of the idea of the deification of man. Theologians are just theologians. They think. To think belongs to the sphere of mortality. But to have that unerring perception which transcends all thought knows no fear. The theologian knows fear. The theologian exercises preferential choice where his thought is concerned, because he bases it upon certain assumptions made by the limited intellect of the imperfect man. And therefore he builds up a system which satisfies him intellectually and is supposed to give satisfaction to others. But that means a satisfaction for oneself at the price of the whole truth. This is the difference. So this voice which calls incessantly says, come home by the road of virtue. And in this book, certain words are sometimes printed in capitals, small capitals. That means that they refer to the transcendental aspect of the word. When virtue is printed in the ordinary way, italics or Roman, ordinary Roman characters, simples, then it refers to virtue in the worldly meaning, in the dictionary meaning, the opposite of vice. But virtue, as applied to transcendence, is not the opposite of vice. We define vice and virtue, and they are always in opposition and in conflict within us. God does not define virtue, and certainly he does not define vice. God, transcendence, is virtue, is creative power. You may recall time and again I have suggested as a meaning of this virtue, soul strength. The strength of the soul within us is derived from this strength, which is creative power in action. It is transcendent. It is absolute. There is no challenging it. There is no question of merely obeying it or disobeying it. It is a question of being in such a state of listening. And remember that the word obey, derived from the Latin audire, means to hear, to listen to pay attention to. If we listen to this voice which calls incessantly, we will not be troubled with any problems of obedience or disobedience as the world understands these things. Because where there is spiritual obedience, I beg your pardon, where there is full spiritual freedom, what can be the meaning, what can be the place of obedience and disobedience in the worldly sense, in the dualistic sense? One has gone completely past it. That means that the transcendent, the immeasurable, the infinite has come to full manifestation through you, the individual being, who are finite, measurable, mortal. This is the miracle, if you like. God comes to perfection as manhood through the psychophysical organism called man. And so that is deification. And it is simply because through the millennia there have been those, one here, one there, who has realized this fact, who has realized the deification, that the very idea or the concept of God or transcendence or the supreme and so forth has come into being. Because who else has written and spoken of scripture but some men who have come to full fruition as humans? One of the wonderful things about Christian teaching, but which I'm afraid Christendom has not yet woken up to, is the use of the term Son of Man and Son of God. They are an identity. The word man comes from its Sanskrit root, from which comes the verb manyate, meaning, as the dictionary will say, to think. But this thinking is not like our thinking, a string of words. It's creation. When God said, which means when God minded, it came into being at once. This is creation. Nothing to do with our idea of thinking. But we don't appreciate or understand that. So the Son of Man is the Son of Mind, this transcendent divine mind which creates. The Son of Mind. And this is identical with what all over the world has been presented as the mind of God, or the mind of Brahman, or the Atma, or whatever you like, any word you like. The word doesn't matter. One has somehow or other to sense it. And if that sense of transcendence awakens in the deeps of consciousness, all these things become clear and simple without getting formulated and confined to a system of fixed, rigid concepts, ideas, thoughts, which are only strings of words. If and when this happens, you yourself, the individual person, realize the meaning of virtue, this strength, which has been represented in all the religions of the world as the omnipotence of the Supreme. That is why God, I use God constantly because it's a monosyllable and it's very simple and everybody knows it. That is why all the religions have attributed omnipotence to God. This is the meaning of it, this extraordinary virtue. Now you see at once that this virtue, therefore, is the same as our word, which we commonly use, goodness, in apotheosis, in its ultimate perfection, in its transcendent state. And it also means bliss, ananda, as we say in Sanskrit, bliss. But now, put those two together, omnipotence and bliss. And this bliss is expressed in the Bible as the peace of God which passes understanding. Ananda is that kind of bliss. It is eternal. Never was born, never passes away. Now if you put these two together, omnipotence and bliss, we shall, even at our imperfect level of intellect, begin to sense why and how God is no tyrant, imposing his will upon an other, because there is no other. Otherness has been absolutely transcended. And this is what you and I can realize. These are not things which a God came down from heaven and said. There's no such thing. There is no such phenomenon. It is man himself who realizes these things. He becomes aware of the great archetypal forms in which the transcendent creative energy functions. And he gives them names. So you get the name God, you get the name Archangel, you get the name Angel, and so forth and so forth, just for the sake of helping the intellect of man to differentiate and understand. So now, there comes fruition. And if we understand the meaning of this omnipotence, this virtue, if we begin to understand it, we will see how its operation in the universal process involves the building up of things meaning thereby not just putting things together like one brick upon another brick and building up, but this integrative activity, this mysterious creative activity, which produces cosmos out of primordial chaos. Chaos not in the sense of disorder at all, but this primordial order in a state of quiescence, just ordinarily vibrant, with no movement of translation in space-time. When this primordial chaos undergoes movement per se, motion per se, then in man's consciousness, discriminative consciousness, there arises the distinction between space and time. And he sees this creative activity as the production of a cosmos out of the original chaos. But if one may say, oh, this all sounds very highfalutin philosophy, how does it apply to my daily problems and so forth? If you have a technical problem, for example, and you can't put the machine right, what do? You go to an expert who is master of the technique. In dealing with our technical problem of living the religious life, which is the truly human life, who is the expert to whom we go? That eternal transcendent within us, that's the only expert. So, if the sense of transcendence awakens in us, and we can always relate our problems, our difficulties here and now on Wednesday or Tuesday or last year or this year, if we go to the very source of all things, can we do any better than that? That is why this becomes important. And understanding this becomes so important, especially when we realize the contrast with what ordinarily passes as philosophy. Ordinary philosophy is a product of the intellect to satisfy intellectual curiosity. And if you look deeply into the whole realm of philosophy as such, you will see that it is confined to mortality. Whereas within us there lives immortality. There lives immortality in us. And it shows itself, manifests itself through our mortal process. If our mortal process becomes utterly purified, then that light within shines freely. And the Son of Man is the same as the Son of God. The intellect is now the means, the tool merely, for this profounder reality. There are no words in any language really to express this thing. But I'll use the word intelligence, this pure intelligence, called the omniscience of God, or the omniscience of a Buddha, or a Christ, or any of the great spiritual teachers who had realized perfection. This intelligence sees truly by virtue of being that which it sees at its own transcendent level. It is this which operates, and intellect is simply the tool, the servant, the happy servant now of this intelligence, and gives shape as best it can to that which the sense of transcendence touches. So you see, the redemption of man necessitates this kind of awakening of a sense of transcendence, which involves, if you like to use the word philosophy again, which involves a philosophy of the fact, whereas the philosophies which we build up on intellectual assumptions by people who in themselves are imperfect are philosophies of fiction, not of the supreme transcendental fact, which is truth in the religious sense of the word truth. Let the natural springs of your heart move your feet unbleeding on the road of many names. The natural springs of your heart. This is quite different from deliberately taking to religion and striving to obtain the kingdom of heaven or nirvana or perfection or whatever it is. Because in that case, we are just trying to satisfy our personal desire, and we try to run away from reality usually. Look deeply into our own lives. Are we not always trying to play truant where the school of life is concerned, trying to avoid going to the heart of the matter, to facing the fact fairly and squarely? These things are our personal responsibility. But how many of us live the religious life because that transcendence which is embodied in us has quite spontaneously evoked a response out of us? A response, not a mere reaction. A response which is free, completely free from any and every personal desire, good or bad alike. What is our goodness, our dualistic goodness, hedged in by conditions, bound in the mortal sphere of reciprocity? What is our goodness beside the transcendent good? Now you see why Jesus said, "Why callest thou me good?" And he was the sinless one.
There is only one that is good, and that is God. Indefinable. You can't conceive of it. You can't make a picture of it and say, I will follow that picture. You might as well try to bear a family by making love to the picture of the beloved. Can't. It has to be reality. Actuality. So, the natural springs of your heart are there within, and they respond. There is nothing then sought for self, absolutely nothing, either consciously, of course not consciously, nor subconsciously. Because the subconscious mind is an awful deceiver. See, utter selflessness. And remember the enormity of this conflict within. The night of the Enlightenment, if you study the texts carefully, one of the great things that the Buddha says, indicates his complete freedom from all selfness. In the Garden of Gethsemane, going through that awful struggle, not my will, but thine. You see? The natural springs of the heart triumph in the end. Triumph not in terms of victory through conflict, but of fruition through purification, complete understanding, which is transcendent love. This is how it happens. The way these things have been presented through the ages, the ways have their good points, but they have many flaws also. The verbal formulations have terrible flaws. That's where the difficulty lies. We have to unravel the truth. Then, as you walk, you will see the goodness of God fill all the world. Immediately the question arises, how can you talk of the goodness of God when you see this world today with your own eyes? What a terrible state it is in. Not only the world, one has only to look at oneself and what happens within oneself and see what a state we are in. How can you say, you may ask, that the goodness of God fills the world? But if virtue has come to fruition and transcendence is awake, you will see goodness of a nature which we don't see in our ordinary state.